Alex Ferrara, and I'm taking a deep dive into the world of beauty and women's health. I'm asking all the questions and trying every product and trend so you don't have to. Get ready for a little glam and a lot of info. This is Glow Up and Speak Out. Today I'm sitting down with Dr. Jessica Babich. She is a doctor of physical therapy with specialized training in pelvic health, orthopedics, and sports medicine. Jessica also serves on the medical advisory board for FemHealth, which is a physician-led media and research company revolutionizing the way women access and understand their health. Jessica has extensive experience helping a diverse clientele, from chronic pain to new moms, elite athletes, and Broadway performers. She really believes that everyone has unlimited potential and is passionate about restoring and optimizing efficient movement. She lives in New York City, where she owns her own practice. Please welcome Jessica. Okay, so what sparked your interest in pelvic floor health and strength? Like, why did you pick that as your specialty?
Honestly, I kind of just happened to fall into it. So like most PT people, we go into PT thinking, oh, I want to do rehab and I want to do sports. And then eventually, like my first job, I was working in this outpatient ortho clinic and it was very busy. And I was like, oh man, this isn't the type of PT I want to be. So I ended up going into a residency with the Institute of Physical Art, which is a residency that basically looks at everything from head to toe. So when I was in that residency, I was working with people with like low back pain or with hip pain, and some of them would get better and others wouldn't. And we always learned about this thing in school. You had like 2 hours on it being like, the pelvic floor is a thing. And I'm like, who would ever do that? Why? But then when you really think about the pelvic floor as being the base of your core and your foundation, if there's dysfunction in it, it can create lasting back pain, hip pain that doesn't go away. So it was like the missing piece or the missing link I found with some of my orthopedic patients. And then I was in Annapolis at the time, and I was in classes, and I was friends with a woman I was taking classes with in New York. And she was telling me that there was a clinic that was wanting to hire more ortho-based PTs into the pelvic PT world. So then I jumped into that, fell in love with it, loved treating fell in love with it, because the pelvic floor is the base of your abdominal core. And when it's functioning well, it contributes to everything. It's not just like bladder, bowel, sex, digestion, pregnancy, postpartum. It's like athletic performance. It's getting rid of pain syndromes. It's everything. So I really enjoy it.
It's everything. I continue to learn that more and more. Every woman I know that has had a baby has had some sort of pelvic floor issue. And before they had the baby, they didn't even know they had a pelvic floor a lot of times. I grew up taking ballet, so it was always a conversation. It was always involved. I knew it was very connected to your balance. And in ballet and also Pilates, it was talked about. But I didn't understand until now all of the ways it can affect your health and well-being. It is wild. So let's start with pregnancy and postpartum. So you treat women both when they are pregnant and also postpartum. So why do women come see you during the pregnancy? Like, what are the benefits of that?
Benefits of seeing a pelvic health therapist during pregnancy is helping with if they're having any sort of pain, also to help with birth prep and to help like set the stage for labor and delivery and to set them up for success postpartum. But some people ask me when they're pregnant and they're not having pain, they're like, why would I come see you? And the reality is their body is changing so much. Their base of support is changing. Their core strategy is changing. Like all their internal environment's changing. So as a PT, we can help them move better body mechanics wise, but we also just can help prepare them for birth. I honestly wish everybody would come in for pelvic PT so that they would be connected to it, because I'm thankful for patients that are pregnant because they've somewhat heard of it. So they're like, oh, maybe I should do this. But then I get other patients that have no idea about their pelvic floor. They've never looked at their genitals. They don't know how to like clean their genitals. They don't know like where what is what. And it's just like, man, this is like basic education that we should be getting like from the beginning. And I just wish it was more of a thing knew about.
We're just not getting it. So thank God for people like you. So everyone knows Kegels, but like what are some other things that you help women with while they're pregnant to prep the pelvic floor?
So honestly, like a Kegel is not bad. A Kegel is just a pelvic floor contraction. So it's a shortening of that muscle. Oftentimes we find that people have a tight pelvic floor. And when it's tight, it can be weak. So a Kegel isn't always the best. It's great to be able to know how to do one in isolation, but it's not the most functional thing. For me, when I'm seeing somebody in pregnancy, I want to re-educate them on their posture and make sure that they can connect their breath to their pelvic floor. So your diaphragm, which is your major muscle of respiration, sits inside your rib cage, right inside it. And then the pelvic floor are those, all the muscles that sit in the bicycle seat area of the pelvis. And they work best and most efficiently when they can be in a stacked position, so right on top of each other. And they're connected with our breath. So when we inhale, you get a lengthening of both of those muscles. And when we exhale, they recoil, and that's what helps to create your core strategy. In pregnancy, this matters because as you get bigger, your rib cage widens and it extends back behind your pelvis. And then we get like more space for the baby. All of our organs move up, but we can also get a little bit of a diastasis recti. Every pregnant person will have a diastasis by the end of their pregnancy. It's okay. It's necessary for the baby to be able to grow. But we want to make sure that we're protecting your core and your pelvic floor when you transition movement. So if you notice that there's a popping out through midline, you can use your breath or an exhale to kind of help manage pressure in your belly. So a lot of times in pregnancy, I like to take the time to help my patients reconnect their breath to their pelvic floor and like getting in touch with like what it feels like when they're inhaling and exhaling, what their pelvic floor is doing.
I definitely have the coning when I do certain things. This pregnancy has not been subtle. Like my guy made a lot of room for himself very early. Like at 7.5 weeks, I was super sick and also couldn't fit my pants. It was like so fast. So yeah, I'm really noticing. And it's hard because when you've been using your core a certain way your whole life, like just getting out of bed, I would just use my core muscles. You know what I mean? When you've been doing these things your whole life, it's hard to adjust and say, okay, wait, hold on. I shouldn't put so much pressure, or I shouldn't be doing a plank right now. It's tricky.
Yeah. It's one of those things that the slower you can do something, the more motor control and core strength you have. And I think in general, most of us, when we get out of bed, we just like throw ourselves out of bed. And then in pregnancy, in the beginning, that you may be able to get away with that strategy. But if you're having pain and as you get bigger, you really want to be thoughtful and intentional about how you're moving, like setting yourself up for success so that when you go to get out of a chair or when you get out of bed, like just be close to the edge, like make sure you're using your legs, use your breath. We don't always think about those things, but those are the things that help us function efficiently and keep us out of pain throughout pregnancy, but also beyond. So that's like how a lot of us PTs are trying to like retrain all of our people, is to be really thoughtful and intentional about how they're moving, what exercises they're doing, why they're picking these exercises. So you mentioned like a plank. A plank is not bad. It's a great exercise. It's just, we have to be thoughtful about in pregnancy, is it the best at all stages? Like what's the goal? And I think that when we really like step back and be like, okay, my body's changing, it's growing, I want to keep getting strong, but there's maybe a better way to access my core that's not as straining.
So you talk a lot about the diaphragmatic 360 breath. Can you explain that? And I see this a lot on Instagram. There's this trainer, Megan Roop, the Sculpt Society. I don't know if you know her, but she posts a lot about it, and it's supposed to be, all I know is it's supposed to be really, really good during pregnancy and postpartum to help start like knit those muscles back together. But can you tell us what that is?
Yeah. So like I mentioned earlier, your pelvic floor and your diaphragm work together to create core stability and pressure within your abdomen and pelvis. but your breath is the first part of your core retraining. So a 360 breath is having the ability to breathe forwards, sideways, backwards, and down into your pelvic floor. So you can feel this breath most efficiently when your rib cage sits right on top of your pelvis, when it's stacked neutral. So if you can feel this on yourself, if you have your hands on your belly, when you inhale, you should feel the excursion come forward. Same with the rib cage, same with the back. And then also if you put your hand on your perineum, which is the area between, in women, the vaginal opening and the anal opening, you should feel on the inhale, your perineum descend or come into your finger a little bit on the inhale, because that's where you're getting the length. So a lot of times we think of like just belly breathing. We don't want to just do belly breathing, especially in pregnancy, because our rib cage, when we get bigger, it wants to tip back. So we tend to lose the sideways and backwards breathing. When we get really tight back there, we're more prone to getting hemorrhoids, having issues with constipation. You could get erectile prolapse, like things are going to be tighter in the back. So you want to access like a nice 360 or umbrella breath to help, like, use your breath to access all areas of your core. Because your core isn't just the six-pack muscles. It's not even the six-pack muscles that you're seeing at the beach. Your core is, you can think of it like a cylinder. It's the pelvic floor is the bottom, diaphragm is the top. And then around it, you have your transverse abdominis, or that corset muscle with the multifidi in the back. But you also, there are other parts of your core as well. But in general, like, it's a deep, you can think of it like a pop can. Kind of. Yeah, like, so I'm from Michigan, so I'll say pop.
I love that. I'm from Missouri, not close, but, you know, we're kind of
along still like Midwestern.
Yeah,
right?
We're Midwestern, yeah. So that's so interesting. So this is less of the short, you know, chest breath that you would do in a cardio class. And it's more like what I would think of as in a voice lesson. I went to musical theater school, and it was a lot about the breathing low and 360. It's more along those lines.
Yes. Absolutely.
So crazy.
Your voice also is a part of your core. Like, so if you, think about it, like when you give birth, right? Why do we, like, babies are really cute. So we get excited about them. And then we talk in this really high pitched little voice towards them. But when you do that, if you notice your voice, like if you change your pitch and it's really high, your like pelvic floor pulls up, your core turns on automatically. It's like naturally happening. You're naturally getting your core back by like interacting with your baby. But if you talk low and think of being low, it kind of, it pushes your diaphragm down. So it helps to calm your nervous system, but it also helps to create like length in those muscles and create like space.
It's so interesting, and hearing you talk about it, it's so nuanced, way more than anyone would ever think. So we need someone like you to help guide us. So let's talk about postpartum and recovery. I was just watching you on Instagram talk about recovery with women who have had an episiotomy versus women who maybe did tear during a vaginal birth, but it was natural. Can you talk about sort of the differences and experiences between those two?
Yeah, honestly, I didn't even realize that episiotomies were still a thing.
I didn't either. What? I thought that was kind of like the 90s. I thought we were done with that.
Ideally, an episiotomy is not great. Like, I've never been in like in a birth, so I wouldn't necessarily know if there were like emergent situations where the doctor made that clinical decision. Sure. Of like, we have to just get in there. But in general, from what I know, like tearing naturally is best, because if you do an episiotomy, it's a deeper cut. So you're more likely to not just get like the skin, fascia, muscles. You can get into like the sphincters a little bit. There's like different types of tears you can have. Most people, at least with their first time, will tear, 85% of them will have a little bit of a tear, like a grade 2. Not a big deal. Like, but it's just when it gets in, when it starts to get deeper into the muscular layers and like getting through like even the anus, that's where things can get tricky. It can be difficult having bowel movements, difficult with incontinence, both bladder and bowel. So tears happen, but it's important to like not, if you have one, like a small one, nothing to worry about. If it's a bigger tear, like a grade 3 or 4, definitely want to be thoughtful about getting some PT to help reconnect everything, doing some scar massage. I mean, I recommend it even with like a grade one and two, but I wouldn't be afraid if you have a bigger tear. Because I think we try to, I don't want anyone to feel afraid of birth or like their birth experience, and we can't always control what's going on.
It's so interesting. I didn't know that PT could help with tearing. I did not know that that was a thing you could do.
Yeah. So in general, like the research shows that you're less likely to tear if your tissues are really hydrated, if you like labor in a gravity assisted position, and you have less intervention during your actual birth. But in between pushes, maybe like a warm compress on the perineum just to help the tissue load, like slowly open and stretch so that the baby can come through. Now, before that, though, like with PT, working on pelvic alignment, working on hips, doing some perineal massage just to get used to like that stretching feeling can also be helpful.
Okay. Wow. That's so good to know. So I have a good friend who is dealing with pelvic floor prolapse right now after a really, really difficult birth. Do you, and I, that's more of an extreme case, do you see and work with people who are dealing with those sorts of issues?
Yeah. So pelvic organ prolapse is very common with birth, especially vaginal birth, but it can happen even if you haven't had birth. So a lot, it can be from trauma to the pelvic floor muscles, like not being able to support the organs, but it could also be from having too much pressure in the abdomens if you've had any abdominal surgery. All of our organs are held in place by fascia, and then our pelvic floor is being the base of our core helps to support it from the bottom. So because we do everything upright, right? We're standing, we're walking, over time, like the fascial ligaments can get weaker and then organs can hang lower. So after birth, if you've had a trauma or if you pushed really hard and you didn't really give yourself a chance to recover, sometimes you can experience pelvic heaviness or pressure. I also have had some friends who like gave birth and had like a rectal prolapse immediately. So, and it's just because things were tight and there wasn't enough like space. That's why working on breathing and trying to like open up the pelvis, open up the hips, all those things can be helpful. But sometimes we don't always know like the strategy they were using to push and to what were they like prior to getting pregnant? What were they like in pregnant? We don't always know. So.
Right. So what are some tips or things you would tell someone who is dealing with a pelvic floor prolapse situation?
First, I would tell them not to worry. I would tell them to go see a pelvic floor PT because like we are the ones that are masters of the musculoskeletal system. We like are able to look at it from its part, but then also connect it into the whole. Like, why is she having prolapse? Is it because the muscles themselves are weak? Is it because posturally she's not managing pressure well? Like, what's her core strategy? So a pelvic PT will be able to go through all of that and also be able to help decide if like pelvic exercises will help the prolapse come back into a better position. But also too, like there's different grades of prolapse. So grades one through two is where it's still inside the vaginal canal. But then when it gets to three or four, that's when it starts to come out. So if it starts coming out, it's okay. There may be, you may at some point need surgery. There are other also devices that you can use. It's called a pessary and you can get fitted for that. It's where you can stick it inside your vagina and it keeps the organs in place. They can be hard to fit. So it can be like a little nuanced, but like it just, each patient's going to be different. So you want to make sure that you're working with what they want to do, if they're planning on having more kids. So you just have to be thoughtful in your intervention. I will say that directly after birth, a lot of my patients will feel like they have these prolapsy symptoms. And what I'll recommend for them is like, just being like laying down, like if you start to feel heaviness, like sit down, lay down, practice that 360 breathing to see if you can just shift your pressure to like get the organs to kind of come back and then do like some more strengthening exercises. But there's actually a lot you can do with organ prolapse. Like I had people that thought that they had one and it's like, oh, actually you don't. You're just feeling that pressure because you're bearing down whenever you move versus like everything pulling in and coming up. So it's just like their strategies for how they're moving.
Right. Oh, it's so interesting. I just feel like we need so many more specialists like you because I know so many women are just so miserable after having a baby and they just think that's what it is now. You know what I mean? And I'm hearing from you a lot of hope about like there's just a lot that we can do.
There is a lot. And honestly, like I wish our healthcare system was different. I wish like every woman, I wish that everyone was going to like getting a pelvic assessment. I wish that we all like I think it should just be a part of like when you get pregnant, like, oh, we're going to pelvic PT. We're going to learn these things. We're working with your doctors. We're like, I wish there was like a better care team.
Right.
And because I do have patients that like have never been to PT, like even after birth, or they're like, oh, I went to my 6-week follow-up. I can return to exercise and do all this stuff. And it's like, we have to redefine what exercise means. It doesn't mean you can just go running, you know? And I think that a lot of people don't know that.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. When is it safe and how do you guide someone towards returning to physical activity? Because it's pretty crazy. I mean, before I got pregnant, I was in the front row of a dance cardio class. I was at Reformer Pilates. But then I got really, really sick and I was just throwing up, couldn't keep down food or water. There was not much working out, you know, for a while. And now I'm at the point where the throwing up has stopped, but I'm huge. So it's, you know what I mean? It's not like I'm like jumping around. So it is a really crazy change for your body. And for some people, they can work out the whole time like they did and they're fine, and others can't. So how do you guide someone towards returning to what they were once doing? And what do you think is actually realistically safe?
Oof. And again, this is what everybody hates. It's always like, it depends.
Of course. It depends on a million things and the person and all of that.
If we're talking about pregnancy, I always like that first trimester, like if you're sick and not feeling well, like rest, don't worry about it. Like take care of your body. If you've never worked out, the guidelines used to say like, oh, don't do anything. But now we really do want people to even start exercising if they never have. You don't have to do a lot. It's like 150 minutes a week of steady, like state cardio. Like walking, if you want to run, you could run. It just depends if you've been a runner. I think strength training is really important. And I think that that's a topic of conversation that's coming up more often, is that we tend to be very like heavy cardio crazed. And like with all these jumps and runs, and because it feels great. Cardio feels amazing. But strength training is what really helps to keep us strong, helps with our metabolism. It also helps with energy. Like strength training is where it's at for women. So it does depend in pregnancy. I think that we just want to think about like, what's your intention, right? The intention at this stage of your life isn't to lose weight. It's not, but you can always like gain strength. You can gain better motor control within like within your changing body. Like, I think it's a time where you have to like just sit back and like reframe like what fitness and what exercise means to you. And then postpartum, you can technically start exercising immediately. If we define exercise as like, think about this, like if it's your first baby, like you're maybe more afraid of like, what can I do? But if you have a toddler or other kids and you have a newborn, you're like chasing them. So this like, oh my gosh, stay in bed, do nothing is, I don't think the right call, but it always depends on like what type of birth you've had. What's safe to work on immediately postpartum is trying to refine a stacked alignment where your rib cage is over your pelvis. Work on that 360 breathing, because that's the building blocks to our core foundation. doing squats in like a safe position if it does, if it feels okay on your perineum. Because if you think about it, you're going to be getting up and down through a chair. So it's like getting up and down through a chair is basically squats. Anything that's going to open up your rib cage and your chest, if you're breastfeeding, like all that type of mobility work, but just very gentle. I do have a lot of, I do see this as a conversation I have a lot with patients I'll see postpartum, is that they want to get their body back and they want to like jump into things so fast. And honestly, if you can really just take 2 weeks off and just like focus on like your baby and prioritizing sleep and like the new dynamic changes, and then, but just healthy movement snacks for your body, you'll be able to progress a lot faster versus if you're not sleeping, you're trying to get in 20 minutes of exercise, get all this cortisol buildup, you're not losing weight, you're like frustrated. I think that it's better to just, again, have like a different frame of mind in that, especially that first couple weeks, but really through the fourth trimester.
Right. Because a lot of OBs don't talk about PT. My OB actually recommends PT postpartum for most women, which is great. And she talked about that, but I don't know and a lot of other OBs that do. And that, and through, you know, talking to people like you, I know now, I've not been in PT during this pregnancy, but I know that I really, that's something I definitely want to do postpartum for sure. No matter what is going on. I just think it would be so helpful.
Yeah, like, because even if you're not having pain, it is always good to get, even if you just had an assessment and you had somebody like work through things with you and like looked at your strategies, looked at your strength and like build a plan. It's not, I think sometimes people are like, oh gosh, I have to commit to going every week. And that would be tough with kids. Like if you can, that's great. But if you can't, like, that's okay too. It's just like, you're getting data about your body. You're building a plan and then you're like working off of that.
Right. And, you know, I know for myself, I feel like I've lost a lot of muscle just not, you know, for the first half, not being able to get a lot of nutrients and, you know what I mean? Not working out. But like, I can't just after the 6 week checkup, just like jump into what I used to do. People get really injured. And I know women that have gotten really injured. So getting checked out and developing sort of a gentle plan really sounds like the sane, smart way to go.
Yeah. You have to think of it a little bit, like depending on the type of birth you've had, like even if it was a C-section or VBAC, or if you had any sort of tearing, like you want it, like, you just went through a marathon, right? Like your body has been changed for 9 months. And then all of a sudden you're going to try to like jump back into what you were doing. It's like, you really have to let things heal. Like let your like uterus come back down. Like, I mean, there's a reason why, like, why do we have the 6 week checkup? It's like, they don't want you having sex. They don't want you doing any of that. 'Cause they want to make sure your cervix is closed to prevent infection. But it also, like, there's, when you think about all the changes that are happening and then you're just gonna, let's just run and jump into an exercise program. It's like, actually, let's just reset the foundation and take it slow getting back into it. You can still move, you know, don't be afraid of movement. But if you need some guidance, like, definitely go see a pelvic PT.
So can you talk about, how do you help women through C-section recovery? And what are some issues that you see with women recovering from a C-section?
So C-sections, a lot of times people think they're easier. And maybe in some ways they are, if it's been scheduled and like, you didn't have to go through like a half delivery and it was an emergency and you like were prepared for it.
Where did that come from? I don't understand. I would never think that that would be easier. That's major, major surgery. I don't get where that came from, that it was like the easy way out. I just don't understand.
I honestly don't either. It's definitely harder. Like getting, it is major surgery. They cut through so many different layers of tissue to like get through there. Then they're like stitching it all back. Then the scar tissue has to like develop. And then, but if this tissue gets so tight, you can think of it like if your shirt was like really tucked into your jeans, right? And then people don't think that that's going to change how their arms move and how their legs move. But what I've come to find is that with C-sections, nobody's referred for PT, which is crazy because if you have knee surgery, you're immediately referred to PT. This is, we're cutting through like so many layers of tissue. Like, then you have a baby and it's like, good luck. That's just so crazy to me that it's not like you have to go to PT. So it's the same sort of recovery as vaginal birth, but you want to, like, you still want to work on the 360 breathing, hip mobility, like stability, all that type of stuff. But you do want to be thoughtful about the scar. So once the scar is healed, you want to make sure that it's able to move. And you want to, like, make sure that you're doing scar mobilization, because scar tissue after a C-section will continue to, like, form 2 years after a C-section.
What?
And if you think, if you think about, like, scar tissue adhering onto your back or onto, like, other structures, like, you want, if it's, there's restrictions in there, it can impact how well you're able to activate your core. It can impact your bladder, bowel, sex, can impact everything. And a lot of times people don't, what I find is that I'll get a patient who's had a C-section like 10 years ago, and they'll come in with back pain, and then I'll, like, feel their abdomen and that scar is, like, adhered down. And I'm like, oh. And then if you do some, like, scar tissue relief, it's, like, crazy how they're able to reconnect to their pelvic floor. Back pain goes away, hip pain goes away. It's because we weren't thoughtful about, like, you can think of it like a t-shirt, like, really tucked in, right? Like, how would that affect how you sit? How would it affect how you jump?
Of, like, course. It makes so all, much like, tucked sense. In. It makes so much sense how you're describing it right now. I just had never thought about it like that. So you said some scar tissue movement, and you have a special certification in manual PT, correct? Can you tell us what is that and how is that different?
So I am a certified functional manual therapist through the Institute of Physical Art. So basically, I mean, I really do believe that the best outcomes for patients is a combination of manual therapy, exercise, coaching, like using like all your tools in your toolbox. But even if I'm not treating somebody's scar, like I always teach patients how to do it themselves, because eventually they should spend like so many minutes on it a day. So like in the beginning, you want to make sure the scar is healed. Then you just work like superficially through, like, meaning like at the very top layer of the scar. Then you like work your way down into the muscular layer and then into the organ layer. So it's funny because being a manual therapist, right? Like I remember being in PT school and they'd be like, palpate C1. I'm like, I'm never going to feel that. And now it's like, oh yeah, I can feel a uterus. I can feel your bladder. I like can differentiate between the two. Like it's just like you don't have to know that as a patient and on yourself, but you can start understanding what feels restricted and what needs to move.
Wow. That is so interesting. That's a special talent. I mean, I feel like, yes, you can learn it, but I also feel like that's a gift to be able to put your hands on someone and be like, okay, this is the uterus. This is this. This is tight. This is not.
Yeah. I'm like really into it. I mean, that's like kind of my hobby. Like I mean, PT is my hobby. I'm one of the lucky ones that I got to do a job that I'm like also really like passionate about. I always knew I wanted to go into PT, and it's just interesting how it's changed and to like where I am now.
So we all need to talk to someone from time to time. We could all use a good therapy session. Where it gets hard is it can feel really daunting to do the research to find the right person for you. It can be really expensive. And trying to find time in your day to leave your house or to leave work to go to a physical appointment is real tricky sometimes, especially after COVID. So that's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp will match you with a virtual therapist in 24 hours. They do all the work for you. And if you don't love the first person they match you with, you can go back to the drawing board and they can match you with someone else. It's also all virtual, so you don't have to leave your office, you don't have to leave your apartment, you don't have to leave your house. If you're going through a rough patch right now and you need a little support, this is a great option for you. And even if you're not, even if you just need to vent about a bad day you had, or you just want a listening ear, try BetterHelp. And for 10% off of your first month of virtual therapy, use code SPEAKOUT at checkout. That's code SPEAKOUT at checkout for 10% off your first month of virtual therapy. For more information, just scroll down to the bottom of the show notes for this episode. And thank you, BetterHelp, for sponsoring this podcast. So you have your own practice. So So why? Why your own practice as opposed to working for, you know, like a company or like working with a group?
basically I decided to like start my own practice because I really wanted to give patients the space to be able to like share their story with me, their whole story, and look at them as a whole. So a lot of times, like in a medical model or in an insurance-driven model, it's patient comes in, this is your pain point. We're only going to look at the pain point, and then we're going to only give you 10 minutes and then you're done. But when it comes to like pelvic health and when it comes to somebody's like well-being, if they're in pain or if they just want to move better, you really have to look at the whole person. You have to like hear what they're saying because no one knows you better than you. And I don't know if you've ever been dismissed by doctors, but I never want to be that type of practitioner to my patients. I want to give them the space to tell me what's important to them, what they think's wrong, what their goals are. And then I want to like partner with them to and give them the space where they feel safe, where they can, where we can achieve those goals together. I think that having my own practice allows me to kind of do whatever I need with a patient. There's no, oh my gosh, this person has to come in 3 times a week. It's like, well, maybe they can't afford to come in 3 times a week, whether it's finances or time. But when I'm with a patient, once they're my patient forever. Like I will keep in touch with them. Eventually they'll discharge, right? But then they'll come back in for neck pain or they'll come back in because their kid has a knee issue. You know, like but I want to be that type of doctor.
Yeah, that's so cool. I've had terrible PT and I've had amazing PT. And the woman who was amazing yes. was a dancer. And so I think she was just used to thinking about how our whole body is connected and how lifestyle is connected. And it's never just one thing. Like I was in PT for tendonitis and it's just tendonitis, but it was taking so long to heal and I was so frustrated. It's because it wasn't just one thing. It wasn't just the cortisone shot and the rest. It was also acupuncture. It was also PT. It was also an anti-inflammation diet. It was also, I realized I was anemic. And so boosting my iron, it was like 50 different things that helped. So it's never just like, oh, this one quick fix.
Totally. And I think that, you know, coming in as a patient, like we think of our pain point, but like the site of your pain isn't always the source of your pain either. So then we can, if you've had really bad PT and you come in for elbow pain and you're just like doing your elbow the whole time, and it's like, it's not helping you because it's actually coming from like in your shoulder or in your neck, or there could be other underlying things going on. It could be like your liver enzymes, which is like a whole other thing. You have to really think of it as a whole person. Like, and I think too, kind of getting back to pregnancy, right? Like a lot of people think that the pelvic floor is what pushes the baby out. And it's like, actually the pelvic floor doesn't do anything. It just like gets out of the way. It has to be able to get out of the way. Your uterus does the pushing. It's the chemicals. It's the feed forward mechanism of birth. That's like getting everything out. And it's like your breath and like, it's not your pelvic floor.
You're blowing my mind with so many things right now. So a few years ago, I was shopping at the Goop store in Sag Harbor, which we all know Goop is amazing and clean and luxurious, but it can get a little pricey in there, but it's fun to look, so fun to look. And I discovered Beauty Counter because they sell a lot of clean brands that they just love. And I thought, wait, what is this Goop approved clean brand that is a little less expensive? And I bought a few products and then fell in love. Beauty Counter is an environmental working group certified brand, so you know it's the real deal. It's EWG certified. You know it's really clean. It's made without over 2,800 questionable or toxic ingredients. They do not use those ingredients, so you know it is safe. They have skincare. They have makeup. It's kind of a one-stop shop for all your bath, body, makeup, hair, skincare needs. It's also a female-founded brand, and they're really working hard towards sustainable packaging that is good for the environment. Some of my favorite products from Beauty Counter are their vitamin C serum that I use every single morning without fail, the All Bright AHA toner, which is the only toner that's ever shrunk my pores, and I think their cream blush is just the best cream blush out there. So you don't have to shop with me. You can buy Beauty Counter on their website. You can get it through Goop. They are now sold at Ulta. But if you do shop with me, I can let you in on discounts, free goodies, free samples. I can create a personalized skincare routine for you and answer all of your questions about the products. So if you'd like to shop Beauty Counter with me, go to beautycounter.com/AlexandraFerrara. That is beautycounter.com/AlexandraFerrara, F-E-R-R-A-R-A. And for more information, just scroll down to the show notes for this episode. So you posted something on Instagram about how pelvic floor PT can help your fertility health. What is the connection there?
Basically, like, fertility is kind of like a hot topic right now, or at least I feel like it is, because every time I go to a gynecologist, they're like, let's check your levels. I'm like, nah, I'm okay. I don't want to like be influenced either way. So
totally.
But I have seen patients who are trying to get pregnant and then they've gotten pregnant. Can I say that I got them pregnant? I won't, because there is no evidence behind it. But if we think about how everything's connected, if you have had fibroids, if you have polycystic ovarian, if you've had any sort of surgeries in that area, if you have scar tissue, it's going to impact how well those organs are moving. And then if you impact the organ movement, it'll affect the net. So all organs have a natural movement to them. That's called motility. So if the organs can't move the way that they should, it's going to impact how your endocrine system is working. So technically doing visceral mobilization, scar tissue mobilizations can in theory help somebody with fertility. Also, as simple as like pelvic floor tightness. If you have a diagnosis where you can't tolerate penetrative sex, pelvic floor PT can help to open up your pelvic floor so that you can tolerate penetration. Those are kind of the big things. Like if somebody came in, if they were on like birth controls for a long time, they don't feel like, oh gosh, like how I'm not getting pregnant, like what's going on? Well, there's certain, like I also do a lot of visceral mobilization. So you can do a technique through their body where you put your hand on their head, and it's called a listening technique. So you're feeling their fascial system and you can feel like where things aren't moving. So you may be pulled into their adrenals, like you may be pulled into their uterus. So you treat the organ. And it can help with like systemic health. So I would say if I'm helping somebody with fertility, I want to make sure that their adrenals are working well. I want to make sure that their ovaries have a good motility, that their fallopian tubes are opened and have good motility, that their uterus isn't stuck in any position. Orthopedically, I want to make sure that their pelvis isn't in alignment that could create tension and torsions in the organs. I'd want to make sure that their pelvic floor is opened and that there's not any trigger points in that could be creating some sort of posturing or pressure issues. So there's like it's a different way of looking at it. So like I work with a woman that does a lot of acupuncture for fertility, and it's kind of like the same, like, so she works with IVF, the IVF doctor, she does it and she sends patients to me, and it's just like really interesting to see how it's been helpful.
The connections are so interesting. And what you're saying makes so much sense, because I mean, I'm thinking of it comparing it to like a tension headache. Like, okay, then someone massages your neck and then like your headache goes away and then like your brain works better.
Getting back to how everything is connected, it's like our nervous system plays a huge role in this. Like there's a difference between posture and posturing, right? So if we're feeling really nervous or anxious, we're going to hold ourselves up here. We're going to have a lot of tension in our neck. We're going to become chest breathers. We're going to become disconnected from our abdomens. We're going to maybe get some digestive issues, maybe be holding and squeezing our pelvic floor. It's the nervous system plays a lot of role. It plays a huge role actually in like how well like our fertility is too. And I think that especially like in today's day and age where we're waiting longer to have kids and there's so many options now to like get pregnant, but then you know, I have seen patients who have done the egg freezing and it wasn't good for them. And then they were like, oh, well, we'll just do IVF. And it's like heartbreaking. It's very devastating. And then I'll work with them. And from like a physical standpoint, it's like, okay, these things are feeling better. But then when you like look at their breasts at them, when you see like the amount of like overall tension that they're holding, it's like, you have to believe that if you want to have kids and get pregnant, I like a big part of how I work with my patients too. It's like, I really believe that like having hope is important, and like speaking kindly to yourself and telling yourself that your like body can do this. Because I think that when we put that in our heads, our like body like responds to like, oh, I can't, or this isn't going to work, or, and it does play a role in like how we function.
Of course. You know? You also said there's something on your website about how your body really wants to heal. Like, it wants to. Can you talk about that philosophy? Because I think if you have an injury that's taking forever, you're like, oh, no, it doesn't. This is so frustrating. Or if you're trying to have a baby and it's not working, and it's just, how do you coach the people that you see who are just so frustrated, who have been on a really long journey?
You know, I just tell them that, like, you know, as healthcare providers, like, we do what we can to help heal people. Like, there's amazing medicines, there's amazing manual interventions, there's acupuncture, there's so many things, but your body like actually does want to heal itself. It has everything it needs to heal itself. We're just playing detective to try to like tap into those areas to help things heal and to function better. So when somebody's really struggling with like the same pain or the same things that are going on, sometimes we'll have to change like the input. So I do have patients that are a lot of, like, they have the same foot pain, but then we find out that they're afraid of movement. So then whenever they go to do something, they're like, oh, I'm afraid it's going to hurt myself. But I've told them, like, sometimes you have to load the tissue to like get your foot to feel better, like if you're babying it all the time. But then looking at it from the other aspect, it's like, if you constantly tell yourself, this isn't going to work, I'm not going to get pregnant. If you're audibly hearing that, your body has like a memory of its own and a brain of its own. Like, it will hold that in. And I just think that in today's world, like, everything's so fast and there's so much on social media to be like, this person did it, this person did it. And I just want everybody to be, and I fall into this trap myself, but I think it's important that we are able to just like really be present in our own experience and find things to be thankful for, and like, have like little goals and little milestones to achieve. Like, sometimes it takes like progress isn't always linear, right? Sometimes things go down and they like go up. So it's like, there's little wins to be happy about, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Do you have a really surprising story of someone you've seen that they thought it was like a back or a neck issue, but it was the pelvic floor? Like, is there a crazy story about how someone's pelvic floor affected something else that you would just never expect?
I mean, I've seen a lot of patients with digestive issues, and they've been on like all the medications they've done. Like, they've seen GI, like there's no pathology going on. Then they like come into me and I'm like, okay, like, let's look at your abdomen. Let's look at your pelvic floor. Then we find out that their pelvic floor is so tight that they're not able to like actually have an efficient bowel movement. So they're just constipated, or that the muscles are so tense that like it's impacting the pressure in their abdomen and how like the motility of their colon. So it's just interesting how you can see all these tests that like come back fine, but then movement wise, it was the pelvic floor. Like, if they would have went to pelvic floor therapy sooner, that may have helped with their bowel and bladder habits.
Of course, but of course, the digestive issues. So then what do you do? What, like, how do you treat someone with an issue that's that bad with the constipation, with their pelvic floor? What do you do?
Like, I think that if somebody came in like that, yeah, like, yes, you want to look at, like, we want to talk about their diet, their sleeping, like if they're taking any sort of magnesium to like help with bowel movements. Okay. But then interventionally, like, I'd be working on like opening up their hips. I'd make sure that their tailbone and their is in a good position, that their pelvis is in a good position. And then we would go in and do manual work on the pelvic floor. So it's not like you're getting a massage. You go in like layer by layer and you do a trigger point release, is where you find an area of tension and you just hold some pressure there while the patient breathes or does some like arm or leg movement to help get those muscles to relax. Because that's the thing about constipation or like any sort of bowel and bladder issue. It's not necessarily, it's not always just tension in the pelvic floor. It's like, what are the hips doing? What's the gripping in the abdomen doing? So you're working on like a lot of those things at the same time.
Right. And it sounds like the manual part, the tension release, is really important there.
Yes, it is. Like, you know, if you think of it now, like, unclench your butt cheeks or like let go of your anus. Like, we don't even realize that we like hold things in so much. So a lot of coaching can be helpful, but manual intervention in the pelvic floor can be huge, especially like, you know, yesterday I was working on someone who was postpartum. And I was doing internal release of her pelvic floor. And she's like, I'm feeling this in my back. And I was like, yes. Like, your back pain might not actually be your back. It could be because you're holding tension and trigger points, like, in your pelvic floor. That's why we have to, like, reconnect it to your body.
It's truly, it needs to get so much more attention because it truly sounds like it's the base of everything. And my friend said the same thing. She was getting the tension release from her PT and she was like, I felt it in my neck.
So honestly, if somebody has like really limited like neck rotation and you're working on the neck and you're working on the neck, sometimes like going in and like moving their tailbone will like improve their neck range of motion because like the spine is like connected, right? From the top all the way down to the tailbone. So it could be like, oh, well, the pelvic floor on one side, or, you know, if your rib cage, if you notice that your ribs flared on one side, well, it could be the pelvic floor on that side too. So it's just really, and it really is like, it's all connected and trying to figure out like which piece of it is the driver.
Yeah. Okay. So you as the pelvic floor PT, as the expert, what is your sort of exercise movement regimen for yourself? How do you keep yourself in good shape?
Oh gosh. I like a lot of variety. I definitely strength train. Like I think that it's definitely missing like in with women. Like I think that in general, we always want to do like lighter weights or more, cardio-based exercises, but the more muscle that you can build, the better metabolism that you have. So I just do like more basic strength training. I also recently, you know, like as an adult, you like just work all the time or you see your friends or you work out, but I recently like picked up figure skating. So I've been taking like these group lessons with people in the city. So I've made like community and friends from that. And it's been fun to like relearn a skill like as an adult. And I find it's actually a very good workout. It's interesting because I'm always teaching like certain movements, but in figure skating, you have to be like really upright. And I'm like, oh, wow. Like my quads are really weak because I'm always using my butt.
So that it's just is so interesting. Fun. That's so fun that you're doing that. God, I want to figure skate after I have a baby. I loved skating as a kid, but I just have not done it in years.
It's really fun. It's like I have just decided I just want to be like more well-rounded and like, but in terms of like, how do I keep my outside of those things too? Like, I definitely make sure that I like do breathing. I know it's like the most like basic and annoying exercise for most of my patients too, because it's something I want them to be very intentional about, but I try to do it at the end of my day. Like I'll put my like legs up the wall because it's a very like, it's a very beneficial exercise for your nervous system because when your legs can be up the wall and your pelvis is slightly elevated, gravity pushes your organs against your diaphragm so that you get a more natural, we call it a parasympathetic breath. So that helps your system feel calm. So it not only calms you down, it stretches your pelvic floor, like it can aid in digestion, help with sleep. So it's just kind of like a way, like something that I'll do like on most nights, just to kind of, you know, like you're upright and moving around all day, but then just taking the time to like relax.
I need to be doing that. My ankles are so swollen. My OB's like.
Do you wear compression socks?
Yes, but I need more pairs. I need to get some more because they are so swollen. The swelling is all on my ankles and my face. It is wild. And there's just like not a lot you can do. It's crazy. But yeah, I need to be doing the legs up the wall more. So you're also on the board of FemHealth. Can you tell us what FemHealth is and what you do with them?
Yeah, so Fem Health is a group of doctors that got together because they want to try to improve women's health education. So Saya is the CEO of it. She is a doctor down in DC, an ophthalmologist, and she just got all these women doctors who are expertise in their field together and was like, hey, I want to put out like content. I want to create content that allows women to have better access to health and to health education. And I know that outside of Fem Health, like on like their Instagram, they're trying to do like more blogs. And I know that she has some things like where she's trying to work with insurance companies so that women can get access to better care, because the health literacy in this country is just terrible. And I think that there's so much like information. We can get information. You can kind of Google whatever you want and it will come, it will bias its way. And I think that like her idea of getting like experts together to have this group where you're, it's like a trusted source where you can be like, okay, what does this doctor say about egg freezing? Cause they're an expert in it. What does this doctor say about bladder health? Cause they're an expert in it. So I think that it's really cool.
I think it's so cool and everyone should follow them on Instagram. I was looking through today. It's so educational. You're in there a bunch. It's just a really cool idea and I learned a lot just from scrolling for like 10 minutes. So, okay, before I let you go, I just want to ask you some fun questions to get to know you better.
Gosh.
Okay. Do you have a can't live without beauty product?
Actually, well, like lip gloss probably. Just like not a favorite brand, but like I notice when my lips are chapped, it's like the worst thing in the world.
I totally understand.
I need chapstick constantly. And I did see that one stat that like people will consume like 10 pounds of chapstick in their life. I'm like, I'm probably 20 pounds of chapstick.
You're like, I am currently made of chapstick. Is there anything that you would like to speak out about, meaning like an issue, a cause, a charity, just some sort of issue that you would like to bring awareness to?
I mean, I guess just like within my own field, I really wish that everybody would get, especially like women, I really wish that women would go and see a pelvic floor PT, because we will take the time to go over like everything with you, like all the elements and of your vulva and like explain it all, because it's actually like pretty, it can be really empowering when you know yourself and when you know your body and when you know when it's right and when something isn't right. And it's kind of crazy, like how many people like haven't looked at themselves because they feel ashamed about it. And I know like we're lucky that we're living in a world where it's becoming less taboo, but it's still like, I mean, geez, even on Instagram, you can't say like certain things without like changing how you say it or like it'll get flagged. And I just think that like our sexual health and our like pelvic floor. And I think that I just wish we had better women's health in this country. And I wish that we just had time to educate women on that more.
Me too. I completely agree, which is why we're so grateful for people like you. So where can we find you and follow you on Instagram or work with you if we want to?
Oh, well, you can follow me on Instagram at dr.jessica.dpt, or you can look for me on my website, www.jessicabavich.com. And it has my like contact information in there, like my email and my phone. So even if you're not in New York, I will still chat with people and help guide them to pelvic health providers. Like there's a really good resource. There's like you can look for like a practitioner map, like of pelvic health PTs. There's one through Pelvic Sanity, but I don't.
That's so cool. So even if we're not in New York, you could still be a resource to help guide someone to someone close to them.
Yeah. That's like what I would want. People to know too. It's like, if my caseload's full, cause I can only see so many people, like I will help you find somebody that will take care of you.
That's amazing.
And like, I will be your advocate.
Thank you so much. I learned so much from this episode. You are amazing. Thank you so, so much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on. I really was was great. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Glow Up and Speak Out. If you liked this episode, it would mean so much if you could follow, rate, and review the show on Apple or Spotify. And for more content, make sure to check out our Instagram at Glow Up and Speak Out.